Just go solo.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
TikTok, time waits for no one, not even the solo traveler. Hello, dear listeners. I'm producer Catherine on this episode of Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, will talk about timing issues for your solo adventure. We'll cover things like when to go, how long to go for, and even being realistic about how you spend your time day to day on your trip. Astrid, why is timing something you want to talk about for solo travelers?
Okay, well, we know as people that all of us never have enough time to do what we want to or what we need to do in our daily lives. And just like in your daily lives, when you travel, time is always a part of the trip that you either manage wisely or you can be stressed because you haven't managed it wisely. So, you know, time is a factor of our daily existence. So there are a lot of things that I have come to develop for my own solo travel experiences that helps me not waste time and to utilize my time wisely, but then also not be too strict or too
like rush.
I will stop and smell the roses. I'll just kind of let things happen. So as you said, you know, if you don't use your time wisely, you know, you might not accomplish your trip goals, you'll waste money. And really, the stress level will go up and you won't enjoy yourself as much. On the podcast, I will be discussing various aspects of time and travel that I think are important. As Catherine said, best times to travel to the different places, because certain places are better to go in certain times of the year. Also, you know, in terms of cost, the weather, the activities, etc., how long is the right amount of time to travel to different places? Before I do these podcasts, I always do a little research because I want to make sure that I'm on top of things or, you know, maybe there's something really I don't know, etc. But for this particular podcast, I came across a very interesting formula that a blogger created that helps you determine really how long you should stay somewhere and how long is too long. So I'll be sharing that with you.
Ooh, interesting.
And then I'll talk about slow travel versus fast travel. And also I'll end with some of my time and travel tips or time management travel tips.
Well, good. Let's start with the time in the sense of the time of year. What tips do you have for picking which season to make your trip?
Lots has been written about best time of year to travel somewhere. And there are really many factors that go into this question. First and foremost is what's going to be your key activity or activities for where you're traveling? Because say if you want to go on a ski vacation, the only time you can travel is during the winter and during the high season when it's most crowded and most expensive to go skiing. Now, there might be a little bit of a shoulder season in terms of the real peak of skiing season, but the weather has a lot to do with it and also the time of year. So, I mean, that kind of narrows really when you can take that type of trip, as well as if, say, you want to go to a festival, either the Art Basel Fair in Miami or the Chelsea Flower Show in London. I mean, these are things that are extremely popular, and it is a time when hotel rooms are more expensive, logistics will be more difficult, etc. And all of that takes more time. And usually when things take more time, there's more money. So activity is one. The second thing is basically budgetary cost. You know, when you schedule a trip, say in low season versus high season, and I will specifically go into what times of year that the low and the high and the shoulder seasons are in a minute. But when you schedule a trip in the low season, you can save as much as 50% on airfare and on hotel cost. I mean, I can share one particular example. I have been to Russia in the winter for three times now, and it just happened. Well, the first time I actually kind of wanted to go in the winter because I was, you know, well, as a young girl, woman, I just loved Dr. Zhivago, that movie. And I just, there was something about Russia that just seemed to me that the cold weather in Russia just are symbiosis. So I thought, well, I'm just going to bundle up and do it in the cold weather. Well, I really didn't have any problem. It was definitely cold, but it's a different cold than I experienced even in Louisiana because we're a lot more humid. It was a great trip. And what I found was it was so inexpensive. I mean, the hotel rooms, well, the second time I went was right after one of the I think the ruble had crashed or whatever. But the five-star finest hotels I stayed in, the time before, I think it was $200 a night. It had gone down to $125 a night. And when I tell you this is a fabulous hotel, it is a fabulous hotel. I've been back since during Christmas time to take my daughter. I didn't stay in this hotel. I stayed in another one, which was the only Palace Hotel in St. Petersburg. That, again, was $125 a night. I'm going this summer, and the rooms in these same hotels can go anywhere from $350 to $600 a night. So the bottom line is when you go will affect your budget. So there's budgetary concerns. Then actually, how much time do you have to spend when you're on vacation? You know, do you have a week, a month, a long weekend, or is it unlimited? Because I personally really have become a big, big advocate of slow travel versus, you know, fast travel, which is a few days in one place with a lot of activities, etc. And I'm not saying anything really against fast travel because a lot of times you don't have any more than a couple of days. And I would say if that's the case, you really want to go, go. But if that happens, time management is key. A lot of research is key. If you really want to accomplish what you want to accomplish, because you might get there, you'll get in traffic jams, something will happen, you'll miss 3/4 of what you want to do, and you'll get on the plane coming back and say, oh my God, that was a waste of time. I'll never go there. And you miss the whole ambiance and how wonderful a place can be. But I'll talk more about slow travel versus fast travel, etc. And then fourth again is the weather. Now, you know, we all know hurricane season, and there is monsoon season in the Far East. There's severely hot weather in the Middle East, and here again, severely cold weather in the northern parts of the world at certain times, as well as the far southern parts of the world at southern times. So you need to be cognizant of that. If you travel in those times, you'll definitely get the cheapest prices, but you might be locked in your hotel room. Or, I mean, there's something dangerous could happen. So I always avoid traveling during these times because it really, you're taking too much risk. And when you're taking that kind of risk, you know, you could blow money if something went wrong. So those are just some key factors when it comes to time. But the travel seasons, in general, it's widely accepted because of cost and weather and fewer crowds, not completely crowd-free, but just the most pleasant time to travel where places really feel like they really are in mid-spring, which is late April to early May, those few weeks, and then mid-fall, which is late September to November, basically before Thanksgiving. That's the sweet spot of the best time to get all the factors at the best levels in balance, okay? The worst time is August 15th to August 31st, which especially in Europe, because what happens is all the Europeans, like especially the French, they're on vacation for these 2 weeks. A lot of things are closed down. Then you have a lot of foreign travelers there. And so you've got the hot weather, the foreign travelers, and half of, say you're in Paris, half of Paris or more, they're somewhere else. So it doesn't have the same essence. So don't travel if you can help it. And if this is the only time you can travel and you really want to go, go. But you have to know that it's not going to be totally like it really is. The basic travel seasons, like I said, are the high season, the low season, and the shoulder season. The high season is typically between June the 15th to September the 21st. And that's in North America, Europe, Australia, South America. And remember, if you're going to South America at this time, it's cooler. You know, the weather patterns are totally different than they are in the Northern Hemisphere. It is the most expensive time to travel. I mean, you know, this is when all the travel industry really bears down to try to make enough money to carry them through the low season. Most crowded. And this is, to me, I mean, the expense is one thing, and it can keep people from traveling, especially during this season. But what really turns me off, and I know, especially as you get older, but anybody now, because we all experience so much delay, whether it's in, you know, traffic jams or, you know, whatever, and we're so used to, like, let's get it done fast, everything's got to be, you know, efficient, etc. The lines are so awful in a lot of places that, you know, especially the main sites that you want to see, that you will spend 3/4 of the day because of the line. Now, that's bad. So you have to know that, and sometimes it's not quite as bad, but usually it is. So bottom line, I think this is the most stressful time to travel that you can pick. But if you don't have any other time to go, go. But know that maybe you can only do two or three things and just be prepared. Okay, the low season. You get the better bargains on the hotels, the airfares, and even the shopping is better. I mean, especially in haggling areas, areas of the world where you really haggle for what you want to pay for an item. These people, you know, it's feast or famine for them. And so when you go in February and there's nobody there and, you know, they didn't sell enough during Christmas and their January wasn't good, February's been totally dead, and then it's about February the 21st and you're there, woo-hoo! You could bring home a haul. So, and I actually love to travel in this season. I know that it just sounds counterintuitive, but I love to travel so much it doesn't bother me now with the weather. Now, I won't go, though, if it's hurricane season or mon season. But if it's real cold and maybe if it's pretty hot, because I'm used to hot weather, just so it's not like 110 degrees and humidity 90 degrees. Now, that I don't think I'll even, you know, go to save some money. But the low season is when you get the best deals. Like I shared with you, the hotel rooms in Russia. I mean, it's just amazing how much they come off. And really, the flights are a lot cheaper, too. You'd just be surprised about, you know, how much money you can save. So consider that. Then you've got your shoulder season, which is ideal, spring and autumn. You know, the weather is nice. Prices are not rock bottom, but they're still good. The crowds are not as bad. And like I mentioned about, you know, the earlier in the podcast, the rhythm of the daily life is there. And I think this is so enjoyable to get the sense of the place where you are. And it's just the vibe when you're there is just much more authentic. Mm. And I really like that. So, and most everything is open. Because when you go in the low season, a lot of times museums will be closed. Or they'll only be open one time during the day, or, you know, they close for the winter holidays, some shops and things like that. So, you know, a lot of things are closed during the winter season. So shoulder season, that doesn't typically happen. Maybe a little bit, but not so much. Okay, then there's, you know, another important aspect of time when it relates to travel and money. Is basically when to book your hotel room, when to book your air flight. Well, let me tell you something. This is such a controversial subject now. It used to be hard and fast, kind of. There were some sweet spots, and there still kind of are, but it is changing so much because of technology and real-time prices. I mean, just with airline fares, they can change by second, and just the algorithms in the different search sites on the web, and, you know, the travel agents, they have good networks, but those aren't quite as value oriented compared to other things now. So it's really hard, but I'm going to give you just a couple of guidelines. But with that said, I really don't think there's anything that hard and fast anymore, except when you book a flight the day before or within a week, say you're going transatlantic or something, it's not going to be good. The only way you can get a good fare is if you have a family emergency, say a death in the family or a serious illness that, you know, you can document and you can present. Sometimes airlines will be very good and give you a very good fare. But for airfare, 8 to 10 weeks out. Now, that doesn't seem like it's right, but that's what a lot of travel experts still say.
That's kind of the current conventional wisdom.
Current conventional wisdom, but saying that, I mean, I know myself. I've got all these alerts that come in. I'll reserve a certain flight for a certain price, and that, you know, the site will say, okay, well, if it gets lower, we'll contact you or another site and we'll either reduce it or, you know, you can put this reservation in and it's not secure until this date and we'll watch the prices. I mean, and this can go on until 10 days, a week before the flight. And really, it depends on so many factors because there are a lot of big companies that buy up seats, discounts, aggregators. You know, they'll put another plane on the flight schedule. They'll do all kinds of things. So it's really, really, it's a mystery, to tell you the truth. Hotel rooms, here again, I think that's getting even wilder and wilder, too. You know, they say 2 to 3 weeks out, which scares me, especially if I'm going on a big trip, because I want to know that I'm going to be staying in the hotel. I want to know that, I want to stay in. But it can change, and some of the sites will allow you to reduce the price if it changes. Some of them won't. Some of them will give you a really good deal if you book it now, you know, kind of 30% off or whatever, and then if you wait longer. But then you've got Hotel Tonight, which is an app that you can go to a city, and you can, and that app will crawl all these fabulous hotels and try to get you a fabulous price. And a lot of people have gotten a lot of great prices that way. So if you don't have to have or you don't need to know where you're going to be staying and you hit Hong Kong and you want to use Hotel Tonight or one of the real-time apps for hotel rooms, you might get something that you cannot believe. Because the hotels want to fill it up. They have all kinds of their own cash flow metrics, etc., that are very important. So let me tell you, this is really hard to try to do it at the best time. And also here again, you've got the flash sales now. You've got websites such as Jetsetter, which I love. They give flash sales all the time on really fine hotels that you can book now and you have to take the trip during a certain period. Or if you can go within the next 3 days, I mean, you could get a fabulous hotel for 50% off. Well, Your air flight will be super expensive, and if you don't need a visa, it's okay. And maybe that is something you could afford. But the time aspect, when to book now, is very hard to tell you when. You know, because I think technology has changed it completely, to tell you the truth. And then also, it's the travel patterns. If say there's a terrorism threat, or there's been an incident of terrorism, it will completely crush an area for a period of time. Well, let me tell you something. Those prices are going to get very affordable, and it doesn't matter how far you book out. You probably need to book it now or right after it happened. You know, I mean, I shouldn't say that, but there is some vulnerability there depending on current events and who's really traveling, the economy of the world, et cetera.
Let's turn now to talking about the length of stay of your trip. You've made comments before about the amount of time a traveler spends in a country or a city. So how do you make these decisions, Astrid?
Well, there's several factors that I go into how much time that I want to spend in a place. And like I told you, I'm a big advocate of slow travel. So I want to kind of go into what slow travel is all about and really why I like it so much. I've been traveling now, for starters, over 35 years, and a lot of it has been solo travel. Well, because I've been so many places, I've done so many things, I've experienced all kinds of different cultures. It's kind of like a been there, done that for your first real understanding of how different the world is and how interesting the world is. So, you know, when I travel now, I want it to be like I'm going somewhere I can stay and, as they say, sit a spell, that I can kind of really get into the feel of a place, the rhythm of a place, and get used to walking or going to the neighborhood cafe and having my coffee every morning. I love to do things like that. I love to kind of orient myself into a place like maybe I live there, you know. So maybe not that slow, but I really like to have a relaxed approach to when I go anywhere, so I can fully absorb the culture. And I can do a lot of different things because I'm the type of person, I like the arts, whether it's the visual arts or the performing arts. So I want to have enough time where I can go to art galleries, I can go to the museums, whether they're art museums or history museums, etc. Or even some of the museums I love to go are museums that deal with furniture and interior design. Oh, I love those. Those are just so, I just love to do that. But, and then I want to eat different types of food. I used to not be so into the food, but now I've really gotten to be, you know, the food is important. And also, for my website and for what I'm sharing, people love information about food. So I'm trying to learn too. So I want to go to the ethnic restaurants, maybe one of the Michelin starred restaurants, you know, some of the different types of restaurant formats, etc. And I don't want to just go in and have a meal. I want to go like I live there and have a meal, you know? So, and that takes more time. Plus, of course, you know, seeing the main sites, and I love to shop. So shopping is gonna take some of my time because I just love to look at ethnic crafts, talk to the people who are making them, look for the flea markets. Whether it's window shopping or actually haggling or whatever, I mean, I unfortunately for my pocketbook, I love it. So all of that blended together, I want to be able to stay long enough in a place to where when I leave, I just really have a real clear picture, understanding, a lot of good memories. And of course, I want to have enough time to take photographs. And I like to journal. I like to talk to the people. Like when I'm shopping, if I go into a good shop or whatever, I talk to the shopkeepers and, you know, try to, whatever questions I want to ask about how this is actually, this craft is done and why it started here. I mean, you know, I'm a big, you know, a big advocate of that because really and truly, I have just gotten so, I've had so many grand times traveling because I do it this way, okay? But fast travel really is also, is not bad, especially if you only have a limited time to do it. And these are your first trips somewhere. You know, you can't take too much. You only want to take a little bit of all of this new. You know what I'm saying? So that's not bad either. So it's kind of like, you know, I guess you would say when you're first going to school, the teachers can only teach you so much and then you have to take a nap. So fast travel is not that bad and can be fun. It's just, I think I've grown through that part. But I don't say don't do it. Don't travel this way because it's fast and you won't get a good experience, especially if this is the first time you're going somewhere, okay?
Well, I think you're just pointing out it's two different styles of travel and that they have different factors and different benefits and different drawbacks.
Absolutely. And what I've found is really the older you get, the more you like the slow travel because you don't want to be rushed. And if you want to get up when you want to get up, you know, and all that kind of stuff, when you're young, I mean, you're revving to go yeah. all the time.
Well, even when you were talking about the fast travel, I was thinking about the sort of the stereotypical college. We went go to Europe. We saw 12 countries in
12 days.
Yeah, 12 days, exactly.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to say. 5 countries in 5 days. I go, ooh, ouch. but, you know, there are a lot of good tours that you can go on, especially to Europe, that are very well managed. Now, some of them, but there are a lot of good ones. And then, you know, the backpackers and the Eurail passes, I did it myself. I actually wasn't totally a backpacker, but I got a Eurail pass, and I just went out here, there, blah, 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 and I loved it. It was just so exciting to take the night train from Paris and wake up in Barcelona. You know, or go from Berlin to, so you know, Venice or something like that. I mean, it's just, it's just, there's something about it that is, oh, I don't know. I don't want to say romantic. That's kind of the wrong word. But it's just, it's cool, yeah. You know, and that's not really the right word either. But it's kind of.
I think we're getting you. Yeah. I think we're getting you.
Okay, but let me go through this real quick for the listeners. Most travel experts recommend 3 days in major cities, okay? And this is especially for fast travel. So I'm going to go through this major list real quick. And, you know, if you want it, you can either, you know, email me or put in the comments section. I'll get back and get you the list. But Amsterdam, 3 days. Athens, 2 days. Barcelona, 3. Berlin, 3. Florence, 3. Dublin, 2. London, 4. Which I go, oh, how can you
how
do
that? How could you do that? No. Yeah.
Madrid, 3. Munich, 2. Paris, 4. Oh, that's another one. I mean, you know, Paris, I stayed 10 days in Paris at one time, and that was one of the most wonderful trips I've ever taken. Oh, that's just, so 4 days in Paris, 3 in Prague, 4 in Rome. That's kind of cutting it. I'd say 5, really. Venice, 3. Oh, no, I just spent 8 days in Venice, and that was wonderful because I could linger. I could go to all the different neighborhoods, and Venice is just a magical place. But do not go to Venice in the high season. I mean, if you can avoid it, if you have to, it's the only time. Well, here again, bite the bullet. But oh, there are so many people that it is unbelievable. Because Venice, it doesn't have any cars, so you're locked in, and the passageways are narrow. And oh my God, so And then Vienna, too. So those are just fast travel amounts of time that you should stay in these major cities. Now, this doesn't include your travel time to the destination and unpacking and all of that kind of stuff. So you need to know whether you need to add 1 or 2 days to that. Okay. So, here again, this type of travel, you're only going to hit the major sites and maybe one good restaurant or 2 cool cafes or whatever. I mean, the rest you'll just be picking up a banana at the market or something like that. I mean, you won't have any time, trust me, because, logistics are always iffy. And especially now, I've found everywhere in the world, even with the tube and people movers and everything, it just takes longer to get places. There are just more people doing things, and there are more reasons why you can get delayed, okay? Then the next thing is a time factor, and this really has to do with, I don't want to say health, but just your body, is the jet lag. Now, you kind of need to really plan for this, especially if you're older or you're not really used to traveling and traveling through time zones, because your body has to adjust to it. And let me tell you something. When you hit that brick wall, you can't do anything about it. You basically will sleep a day and a half if you're not used to it or you're not conditioned for it. But supposedly, and I don't know if I believe this because it doesn't hit me this way, but the experts say going from east to west is much easier than from going west to east, okay? And the more time zones you go through, obviously, the harder it is to reorient yourself into that whole day and time, basically. You need to plan for the jet lag. And, I really think a day or maybe 2 is what you need. I mean, after the 3rd day, you're really over it. But what I do is whenever I go across the pond, go to Europe or, say go to the Far East, when I land, especially if it's in the early morning or it's a time where I can walk or do something, I immediately check in, and then I either go walking. I know kind of where I want to go before I even land, or I will see if I can take some kind of short afternoon tour, even the hop-on, hop-off tour. That's typically about 3 hours, sometimes a half a day. Could be 2 days if it's a real big city. But I can get on that bus and I can, sit at the top, open air, and they go through all the neighborhoods. You have music with the commentary. You're getting a good reconnaissance, basically, of the city. And, you're kind of sleepy, but you're still wired up because it's day, even though it's midnight or 3 a.m. So when you get back to the hotel at 6:30, you're starting to crash. And that's what you want to do. Once you get in the hotel room, you want to be able to really go to sleep soundly. Because if not, you're going to wake up at 2 o'clock hungry for breakfast. And then you're up, and it's still dark, and you're tossing and turning. But usually takes, I think, really 3 days for your body clock to switch. So, here again, you need to take that into consideration. And that's another reason why I like slow travel, because, it gives you time to do that. So, and then also, the longer a trip is really, it becomes more challenging. You get homesick, no matter how old you are, you do get homesick. You get homesick for your own bed, for your food, just to sit outside on your porch or whatever. You get creeps in, and once that happens, you also are more tired, and then you're losing interest in what you're doing. So basically, you need to figure out what are your your factors that cause you to, how long really should you stay? You know, that's part of it, okay? 3 weeks, I think, is max for most people. Once they hit 3 weeks, they have hit the brick wall. They're ready to go home. They don't want to go to one more museum. They're tired of Italian food, even though it is so good. Any longer than that, you know, you got to be in shape and you have to be a seasoned traveler. I mean, I know when I went 50 days around the world, and I'm going to do a podcast on this because you really have to be in shape for that. You have to be in shape for it physically. You have to be in shape for it mentally. And then there's an emotional aspect to it too that you have to condition yourself for, because, you know, if you're going to be gone for, you know, 50 days, 2 months, you hit that brick wall a couple of times. And you don't want to mess your trip up because of that, because each place was so exciting. And so I learned a lot on that particular trip. But max 3 weeks, I think, is the limit for most people. The longer your trip, the more expensive. And, you know, how many days you can spend traveling, it depends on a lot of different things. But what I always do is I look at, well, how much extra money do I have that I could earmark to travel for this year or this, you know, 3 months or whatever. And I budget that total amount, and then I, you know, I kind of look for the places that I can go that'll fit in that budget and for how much time that I have. So, you know, of course, money is important, how much time you spend somewhere. So, okay, well, now I'm going to present this interesting travel formula to determine how long you should stay somewhere. Now, I want y'all all to hold on because it's a little bit wordy. And here again, if you want me to send it to you, you can either post something in the comments on the podcast, or you can go to my website, astridtravel.com. I have a little section that says Ask Astrid. You can just say, shoot me that, you know, travel formula, blah, blah, blah. This formula was devised by a young blogger, and she seems so cool. Her site is called Around the World with L, and her name is Lily. And she is a teacher, a mother, and a traveler. And so she has got so many interesting insights that she's a teacher, so she likes to teach. And, you know, she loves travel. And very warm. I mean, I thought she had a lot of spirit in how she was writing. So here again, like I said, hang in there while I explain this. Now, there's seven different things that is in this formula that you have to value from 1 to 10. So I'm going to go through the factors, then I'm going to show how she adds certain factors together, and then there are two groups, two subsets, and then she will subtract the second one from the first one, and that gets you the amount of days.
Okay, I'm so far I'm following, so let's do it. Okay.
So the seven factors are, quickly, travel lust. How much do you want to go somewhere or you need a vacation? Second one is arrival effort. How hard is it to get to, and how much does it cost? So the higher the cost, the harder it is to get to. You get a higher number, so you should stay longer, okay? That's one of the integers in this formula. Then you have home discomfort. Are you needing a break from home, from your responsibilities? Is the weather where you're living so hot, you want to go somewhere cool, or do you want to go somewhere to the beach? It's freezing in New York City, or whatever. Are you in a toxic relationship? Are you in some kind of toxic situation that you need to get away from? Or are you just bored? So, home discomfort is another factor. Then destination comfort. The more comfortable a place is, the higher the number, you know. If it's really, you know, all beach and pina coladas and the breeze coming off of the ocean and music at night and just beautiful sunsets. Woo-hoo. Okay, then the next three factors, of which this is the second subset, is destination intensity. And that's really the opposite of destination comfort. The less comfortable a place is, say like China and India, you know, those places are very exotic. They're third world countries. They're less developed. There are a lot of stress factors in that, and going to these destinations that people who have never traveled there before or lived in a place like that, it will be very stressful for them. So destination intensity, and as well as like how many crowds and all that kind of stuff, okay? So that would be a higher number that you would subtract from all those other wonderful things. Then destination cost. The more money that it costs, you typically have to stay, not stay as long.
Yeah.
you don't want to stay in Paris and then not be able to get home. And then home neediness. Basically, the fewer responsibilities you have at home, then you can stay longer. It doesn't matter. Okay, so you take these two groupings, the first one, travel lust, arrival effort, home discomfort, and destination cost. You add those together, okay? Then you have destination intensity, destination cost, home neediness, you get that number. You subtract that number from the first grouping, and you get range of time you should stay somewhere. Now,
I like this a lot. I really do. It's cool.
I mean, Lily,
she thought about it.
She's something else. Yeah. And really, I mean, I don't know how much this is really perfect, but it's a good exercise to do.
Well, even just while you were doing it, I was like, okay, Australia, so I'm going to be staying there longer. And, you know, just doing this, all those calculations. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah, like I want to go to India. And, you know, I've been thinking about how I'm going to approach it, whether do a luxury train trip or, you know, stay in one place, Mumbai, or maybe go to Mumbai and New Delhi and really dig down in them. I'm still struggling with India, and I've struggled with India for about 6 years because there's a lot of stress in going to India for a solo female traveler on different levels. And because I like affordable luxury and, you know, I mean, I'm going to want to do some really cool things that are probably going to be expensive. I want to be able to figure out how to do all that for the best price and the best way to do it for a female solo traveler. Well, I plugged in these numbers for this formula. So I gave Travel Lust a 10. Arrival effort a 10 because it's difficult to get to India. Home discomfort a 2. I don't need to get away from anything, you know, but it's okay. My husband, he's so nice that he just says, okay, go, Astrid. I know I can't tell you not to. And destination comfort, I gave it a 5 because there are a lot of things about India I know that are going to be difficult in terms of comfort, but I'm going to be staying in the Taj hotels or the Oberoi's, and let me tell you something, those are some of the totally finest palatial hotels in the world with the most fabulous service. So trust me, it's not going to be that much or destination comfort. So I gave it a 5. Then the second grouping in terms of destination intensity, I gave that a 7. I could have given it a 9, but like I said, a 7 because I'm going to probably get a private guide. I'm going to give myself some good, boundaries to where I'm not going to be just out in the streets, you know, on the, I'm going to shield myself from a lot of the things that could drive that number up. Then destination cost, I gave it a 10. It's going to be expensive. I mean, you can't do it the way I want to do it and really do it moderately. You just can't. And the last is home neediness. And basically, you know, I don't have any responsibilities too much. I'm retired, and it's okay. So my two subsets were 20. The first
the good stuff
came to 27 minus 19. It said I should stay 8 days, which I'm thinking about probably 10, maybe 12 if I just do two places, New Delhi and really drill down in Mumbai. But other, and this is just typically what you see, like the train trip, I think, is 10 days.
I can't believe, that's great. It's, I would say that's within range.
Yes, it's within range. So, you know, it's not perfect, but it is an exercise that you should do, okay? And then, you know, bottom line, I think it helps you decide if you're staying long enough or if you're staying too long. So it gives you some kind of range of the sweet spot.
I love it. So that's cool. All right, so we've planned out our days now. Let's get into the time, the sort of the day-to-day timing. Do you have any tips about time management when it comes to day-to-day activities? I'm thinking about things like how long to spend on different sites, how to get around efficiently. And you touched on this a little bit before, but bottom line, how to make sure a traveler is getting the most out of a time in a place without feeling too rushed or like they really wasted their time.
Okay, well, you know, I don't want to keep repeating the same thing, but I will so it'll sink in. You know, it's hard to really answer that question specifically because there are objective factors, there's subjective factors that play. And I really have this philosophy now is I love to go with the flow. I mean, when I'm really enjoying something, I mean, I'll get off my schedule. Before, I was a little like, you know, I'll just cut this conversation off or whatever. But, you know, the older that I get, I don't do that as much. I really am smelling the roses basically more. So what I've learned is I do allocate more time. Say if I want to go to a museum and it really shouldn't take me any longer than an hour, I'll always say an hour and a half. Because I just know myself, you know, so if I end up only spending an hour, I've got another half an hour of a time in my time bank that I can reallocate. So, but, you know, typically two major sites, like say if you're going to Venice, two major sites in the morning, maybe three, a lunch break, two or three activities in the afternoon, with a coffee break, then you have dinner, and then you either, you know, do an evening activity, or, you know, after a couple of nights, a lot of times if you're doing stuff at night and all during the day, you'll be tired and you just want to stay at your hotel and have a glass of wine or two and go to bed early. A-okay. That is, I mean, that's what I think is a great getaway, a great vacation, when you can kind of be like your normal self, like you would do at home. Oh, I want to do stuff at night, and then sometimes I don't want to do anything at night. It's A-okay, okay?
Do you do the same sort of thing for getting around?
Well, kind of what I do is, you know, I plan my activities, or I try to do it in zones. Now, you can't always do that. But I try to, like, say in Venice, you know, they've got two wonderful islands, Murano and Burano. Well, a lot of people's, you know, schedule morning in Murano, afternoon in Burano. Oh, I mean, I scheduled the whole day in Murano and a whole day in Burano. And that was perfect because I really could walk the streets. I could eat, you know, in two places. I could do some shopping. I took a lot of photographs. It takes time to get out there, etc. So I try to plan my activities in zones, and whether I want to spend the full day there or say basically the half a day, okay? Then I also know whether I can walk to the places I want to or if I'm going to have to use Uber, taxi, public transportation, and knowing if I have to do that, there could be some logistical mess ups. So, you know, I kind of plan for some mess up time in there too. Okay. And before I leave or before I set out every day, and really at the beginning of the trip, I'll go and I'll make friends with the concierge and I'll share with with him or her everything that I'm interested in doing. And there, I'll get him to give me the map and show me, you know, the zones where all of this is and this is. And is it okay for me to walk from the hotel to here? Or should I take the subway? Or no, take a cab. Or we will arrange for a private guide, a driver for you, because this is the only way we think that you can do this or accomplish this and do it safely, etc. So, you know, how I get around efficiently, I really try to do it in zones. I ask the concierge and my app. You know, if I'm somewhere and I don't exactly know how to walk, I'll just put it in Google and it'll show you how to walk. You know what I'm saying? So that's great too. So that, you know, I try to use everything that I can to not waste time in terms of logistics, but that's probably one of the hardest things you can do besides if there are lines, there's nothing you can do about that. You know, you just have to kind of, you know, be patient. So I'm going to end this podcast on my list of travel time management tips, which I say, you know, travel time management tips for the solo traveler, okay? First, you know, I shared this earlier. The first full day, I really think you should take it or go slow and easy. You should wake up a little later to help you get over that jet lag. And basically, do something that is not very taxing. I would say, you know, pleasant walking, you know, stay or go to a couple of things that's probably close to your hotel. But I like to take those city tours. I'm a big fan of hop on, hop off. I know a lot of them are kind of canned, but they're usually, I mean, you really get a good feel for the place because they take you in and out of, you know, the different neighborhoods and zones, and there's always music, you know, ethnic music, and it ends up getting in my mind, and I'm kind of humming it even when I'm not on the bus after that. But they talk about, you know, different places and, you know, different facts, cultural items, all kinds of stuff. So I think it's a great way to slide into a place, especially the first full day, because you're not having to be so engaged. You're just kind of, you know, just being led around. And that's good for the first day. Then the second one is after, you know, the second night, I mean, you need to wake up early. By the third day, because the earlier you get up, and you don't want to get up too early, because I used to do that and nobody was up. I couldn't even find a coffee shop that was open because a lot of areas in the world, they start a lot later. But you need to be really out of the hotel by 9 o'clock, because wherever you're going, there won't be as many lines. It'll be easier in a lot of ways to get to. If you're walking, less crowds. And I know I've shared with this tip on a couple of other podcasts. If you're in, say, the countries where there's haggling or any type of different type of selling or you know, merchant style, they have a philosophy that the first customer of the day, if they don't sell something to the first customer of the day, it'll be a bad business day. So I have made some of my best deals when I'm the first customer of the day. So the early bird gets the worm in this situation. Plus, you know, your day's longer. So wake up early. You know, you don't have to crack a dawn, but get out of the hotel by 9, okay? That's what I suggest. Then third, give yourself that cush time between activities. You know, here again, if you're going to be in a museum, you think for an hour, put hour and a half. Don't think you're going to do it in an hour. But if you do it in an hour, then you have more time to either, and believe me, you'll need that extra time. It's so funny how if you sit down some plans, it's always like a good framework, but it'll never work out totally like that. But it'll work out usually really pretty good, unless some catastrophe happens or, you know, it's just one of those days when, you know, oh, gosh. Okay, so that's number three. Give yourself some cush time. Then number four, before you leave home, and I know most people probably do this. This is common sense. But make that must-do list that you feel like you must do when you go to this place. So you have it, and you... Every day, and that goes to the next, the fifth tip, is every day make a to-do list. I know this sounds, you know, kind of, I don't know, a little bit too elementary, but if you have those lists and you zone out where you're going, etc., you'll get so much more accomplished because you will be able to prevent some of the things that cause you not to be able to do something, or you can refocus, or, you know, get yourself regrouped. So you'll end up, say, the last day going to the Eiffel Tower. I mean, it would be horrible if you plan to go to Paris. And so you go to the Louvre and you, the Champs-Élysées one day, the Left Bank and everything. And of course, the Louvre is on. But every day something happens and you don't have the time that you wanted to spend in the Louvre. So you say, okay, well, I'll do the Louvre the next day. The Eiffel Tower the next day. Well, if you haven't gone to the Eiffel Tower by the day before you leave, you are getting stressed.
Yeah.
But you're getting real stressed out. You see what? But these lists do help you, you know, make sure that you don't miss the Eiffel Tower when you go to Paris. Okay. Then, again, review your itinerary or your list with the concierge and do it kind of daily to make sure that what you're wanting to do, where you're wanting to go, that it's realistic, and how he suggests to either walk there, when to use, you know, public transportation or whatever. You know, because, I mean, you know, say you go, like in Lisbon. Lisbon is a... Oh, I just love Lisbon. It's just a beautiful place to go. It's very walkable, but there are a lot of hills. So what you want to do is take the trolleys to the different neighborhoods and get you up these hills and everything. But once you get to the neighborhood, then you do a lot of walking, but you got to get back on the trolley. Well, all of this trolley stuff and everything, you know, you waste time with exactly getting to the right trolley and the right trolley stop, because there are trolley stops where there are a lot of different trolleys. And, you know, it just takes you a while to get used to the whole system. You know what I'm saying? So ask the concierge, get him to say, trolley number 10 at this stop, trolley number 6 at this stop. So you know, you're not going, well, did he say, you know, or which one is it? I'm trying to read the map. No, get the concierge to tell you. So then the next thing, oh my God, this is one of the things you've got to, and I know people are less and less like that these days, but you have got to be patient when you're traveling. And don't sweat what you cannot control, because let me tell you, it's going to happen more and more than you want to admit. And, you know, like I said, delays in traffic, the lines. I mean, you have to let it go. If you don't let it go, you're going to end up after the third or fourth day just being, you know, this is not any fun. Well, yeah. Let me tell you, you're not approaching it in a realistic way, okay? The next, the eighth tip is live in the moment. And this is what I think is one of the most wonderful things about solo travel. You are free to do what you want. You don't have anybody you have to worry about or whatever. And so you can absorb and you can get into what you're doing as much as you're capable of. So living in the moment is just one of the most, it is so much freedom and it's so pleasant. I mean, a lot of people have to get used to it because they're not used to being by themselves, especially away from home. But once you get those skills and you get through all that, oh, it is so much fun. So, you know, take all the photos you want. Talk to all the people. get to know some of the locals. I mean, I know when I was in Istanbul, I stayed in the Orient Express Hotel. It was a boutique hotel right close to the Bosphorus. And every night, they have all these little cafes in this particular area. And right across the street was this cafe. So every night before I'd go to bed, because I didn't really want to do very much at night in Istanbul, even though I went to evening performance, which was very beautiful, and I did walk some because my hotel was so centrally located, and I wasn't concerned about safety at that time. Now, this was about 10 years ago. But I'm not, I'm not big into nightlife, you know, I've just, that's not my thing. So, but then, you know, I don't like to go to bed at 8 either. And I don't watch TV in my hotel room except in the morning. So I like to go sit out in the outside cafes. Well, there was this great cafe across the street. And so after the third night, the waiters all knew me. They knew what kind of wine I liked. And I ended up meeting so many interesting people, you know, because people, travelers especially, you know, you kind of know who you can talk to and who you can't once you've done it enough. You know when somebody's making you feel kind of, nah, there's something not right here. But, you know, groups of people, either even couples. I mean, I know there were a couple of couples from Athens, and they sat next to me one night. And so I started talking to them about the Greek economy and the crash and blah, blah, blah. It was so interesting. We spent about 2 hours, and they were asking me questions and everything, and there are all kinds of conversations you can get into. So, I mean, this live in the moment when you're traveling solo, it is wonderful. So talk to people. You know, you kind of have to get warmed up to it, but talk to the locals, talk to the shopkeepers, other travelers, etc. People watch. I mean, here again, I just love that. I mean, I know some people think maybe it's kind of weird, but I learned so much by watching people, you know, and it's just fun. When you're by yourself, you can enjoy the sunsets, the lingering outside in the cafes and everything like that, you know, because you're either your friend or your husband, significant other, or if you're with a group or your family, they might not want to sit there with the sunset, or they've had it, you know, or they have their own agenda. So you don't have any of these issues when you travel solo. So live in the moment and practice doing that, because it's very, very, it's fabulous. It's one of the greatest things about solo travel. Then, number 9 is allow enough downtime during your trip. I mean, take those coffee breaks, especially, you know, after about the third or fourth day. Your feet are going to be aching you. Trust me, if you're doing a lot, your body, your back, your sugar level's going to go low. I mean, if you have to take 3 or 4 breaks during the day for a cup of coffee, hot tea, soup, meals, whatever, do it. Because if you overextend yourself too much, I mean, your trip starts, the quality of the trip starts to go around. So you want to take those breaks really when you need it to get that second win. Then kind of along the same line is don't try to do too many things in one day if possible. 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, 1 in the evening. I mean, that's a real good, slow, good, I mean, that's kind of what you would do at home unless you were rushing around doing errands, okay? It's, here again, slow travel mindset is the goal. If you can do it and that's where you are in terms of your travel approach to this particular or a particular trip. Number 11, get enough rest nightly. Very important. Some people really have a lot of difficulty sleeping in a foreign place. You know, it typically takes you about 3 days to get through it, to finally feel like the bed, the pillow's right, you know, it's not spooky in the room or whatever, you know, but So when you get a good night's rest, and obviously when you wake up, you just feel like you're ready to, you know, seize the day, or this is going to be a great day, or it's a great day to be alive, or whatever. But you have to be able to rest. So after about the third or fourth day, if you're really feeling tired, don't think you have to do something at night. Let that go. Go back to the hotel. Just relax, you know, whatever, and go to bed early. And the last is, if you feel like that you need this to really manage your time well and to see things that you can't or that will take you so long to do, hire a private guide and a driver. You know, especially in third world countries, they are very affordable. The concierges have typically great recommendations. They can negotiate the price, everything you want to see. You know, that's a really good way to manage your time, manage the logistics, everything. And then also take those day tours, you know, whether they're outside of, one day I took a wine tour outside of Venice. Oh, it was wonderful. You know, it was a group of, I think we were 8 at the most, and we went to a couple of villages, and then we went out into the vineyards and a winery, and it was totally delightful. Now, if I would have rented a car and gone there, which wasn't that far away, it would have taken me a lot longer, yeah. Okay? And this, that, and the other. So, you know, these kinds of organized tours, whether they're walking tours or food tours or whatever, are very good way to manage time in terms of logistics, doing certain things, etc.
Those are all really good tips that help everybody think about the timing of their trip. But listeners, do you know what time it is right now? It's time to get Astrid's packing list. Don't waste time and stress the next time you are packing your bags. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and we're making a special request. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a review on any of those platforms. It really does help the show. And if you like what you're hearing, please share us with a friend. Tell everybody about Astrid's tips and how she can help you be a solo traveler. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.